Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Ashley Barlow Company podcast. I'm Ashley Barlow, your host. If you are a parent, a teacher, or someone who works at a school, or you're a community member, a volunteer, or a staff member at an organization that supports people with special education plans, a coach, a tutor, or even a grandparent, you're in the right place. Sit back with an ice cold glass of lemonade, put on your walking shoes and grab some headphones, roll down the windows and cruise. Ready, set, go. Educate, advocate, collaborate. Welcome back to the Special Education and Advocacy Podcast with Ashley Barlow. I'm Ashley Barlow, and I'm so happy you are here. Friends, I don't know how many of you YouTube people actually watch on YouTube, but when you catch me in a super casual moment or in a funny location, like I have recorded podcast in my car before, I always tend to mention it because we like to be perfectly imperfect around here. And I like for you to know that it is okay to be imperfect, and it is okay to be casual, and it is okay to do business operations in workout clothes. During the pandemic, I used to tease my clients because it was literally a matter of necessity. If I was going to work, I had to show up, sometimes even in a bathing suit. And I would say, I'm just as smart in Lululemon. And I will tell you that this getup here has no Lululemon, but I'm still even as smart in workout clothes that probably came from Amazon. So here we go. I like, you know, today, actually, I will also make mention, I got this great email today from one of you that said, hey, I'm looking at this resource and there's two typos on it and I thought you would want to know. And of course, I do want to know, and I'm very grateful for that. But the first paragraph of my response was, oh yeah, we like to be perfectly imperfect around here. And I'm like, I am a major grammar nerd. And then at the same time, I am really like, I am an Aries through and through. And when I'm done with something, I'm done. And I rarely reread something, as you probably know, because you get my weekly newsletters and you see what goes on social media. I see the typos too, but perfectly imperfect. You know, if the message is there, it goes out. So that's where we are, friends. Hi. It is Friday here. It is lovely. The birds are chirping. I hope that maybe you can hear them in the background. And it is going to rain for like 4 days. And that makes me happy because one of the things that I have been doing over the last couple of weeks, really, is I have been building out this garden bed in my backyard. So a few years ago, we were starting to notice a little bit of slippage in our backyard. And first of all, that was not being super neighborly to the people that live. Our backyard neighbors are significantly lower than we are, like down a, I mean, cliff, like a major drop off. And there's woods in between us, but like if we can see their houses through the woods, you know. And the guy kept coming up and looking in our backyard, which first of all was rude. He should have talked to me. But if you take out the rudeness, he was concerned and he had a right to be concerned. Now, legally, I will tell you that we owe him nothing. But as nice human neighbors, I thought maybe we should do something. And also as homeowners, I thought, this is also a sign that our backyard is not functioning the way that it used to. And so we had our gutters looked at and revamped a little bit. And then we dug 90 feet backwards and 90 feet perpendicular to that across our entire backyard and put in a French drain. And yes, when I say we, I mean Brandon Barlow and Ashley Barlow did that. Now, I love to get dirty. I love to work hard. I love working in the garden. That was a ginormous job. When we were about 60% finished with the digging, we decided to just finally rent the thing rather than spending six more weekends with our digging. And then the thing that dug ran off the tracks and we got it stuck in our trench. That was exciting. It was like 600-pound piece of equipment that we had to get out. So anyway, along, then we put a French drain. So our gutters go like back 90 feet and then take a right. And then they have this French drain that goes. And so the water should dissipate across our backyard instead of all dumping in this one direction. And nobody's complained down there. So I guess it's better. I don't know. The people moved, which is understandable, but the initial complainers moved, I guess I should say. So I put a 90-foot garden bed across the back of my house. Now, you would say, oh, that sounds like fun. And it is. It's quite fun. I planted a bunch of plants that like water, and I would say, you know how it goes, like 80% of them did well, and you know, 20% of them didn't like where they were, or I put them directly on top of a root or a rock or something, and they did not survive. And then last year was the second year, and I put on Facebook, hey, I need plants, I gotta fill this in more. And it became my friendship garden because I got a bunch of split plants from a bunch of friends, which was really nice. And this year, I'm having a general freak out anyway. If you're following me on social media, you know, like, life is kind of caving in a thousand different ways. And one of my freak outs is Griffin is about to be a senior. We're finishing up his junior year of high school. College recruiting and decision making has really ramped up. Swimming, like summer swimming, has begun. That starts in like late April, early May. And so that means he is like in the summer before his senior year is a swimmer. And I think that's really kind of what triggered it for me, was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. But I started thinking, oh boy, we have a graduation party back there in a year, and so I got to fill this thing in, and plants take a second. And so we put another 48 perennials back there, including phlox, which usually goes really, really fast. Doesn't like water, so I put it on the other side of the drain. Anyway, why did I start to tell you that? There was a point of that. Oh, so it's going to rain, and that's great because I have spent like a half an hour a day for the last 2 weeks out there watering and pulling weeds and that sort of thing. So now we're just going to let it go wild for the 6 days of rain, and then we'll be in business. I'll be able to mulch, get moving. So, lovely day. I love rain. And I want to talk to you. I'm super excited to talk to you this week, because the last couple of days on the podcast, the last couple of weeks, we have talked about some ideas in negotiation. And this week, we are going to talk about one of my favorite things to talk about, actually, in negotiation. We are going to talk about psychology. This is kind of fun. Fun fact about me. My first college class was psychology. I had an 8 o'clock on a Monday. My school started on Monday. Maybe it started on Tuesday, actually. It was a Tuesday-Thursday class because, oh my gosh, I remember, because you didn't have school on Labor Day, so you started on Tuesdays. And my first class was in Benton Hall. It was an 8 o'clock class. It was psychology. I don't remember the guy's name, but he had sweaty armpits from his elbows to his waist. And he would stand in this posture. He would pose a question at the projector. If you were born after 1985, a projector was like a smart board or Apple TV or whatever you use now. Only it was different. It was better. And the teachers got marker all over their hands. And he would put his thumb up against his other four fingers, and he would put his elbow into his waist and his hand like as far away as he could get it. Then he would put his other hand on his hip, and he would make like duck lips, like he was taking a selfie. And then he would look down very contemplatively, like, I think you might think that he resembled Dwight from The Office too. He was a very interesting guy. But anyway, I fell in love kind of with psychology then. And I think that what I learned in that class about humankind and people really did kind of inspire the rest of my career path or my education, because I took a lot of classes in ed psych. I really ended up to like educational psychology, like child development stuff and that sort of thing. If only I had known then, I say this all the time, about school psychology and OT. I wouldn't be a lawyer. I would be a school psychologist or an OT. But I digress. So today we're going to talk about psychology vis-a-vis negotiation. And the reason I want to talk about it is because I think that understanding how to negotiate, as I have said 100 times, makes your advocacy better. You know, we say we need 3 skills in advocacy. We need to know special education law. We need to know special education practice, how it works, what it does, what the curricula are. And we need to know negotiation and advocacy strategies to get what we think a child is entitled to with our foundational knowledge of the law and the practice. And so something that I talk about a lot here is empathy, evoking, provoking, encouraging empathy amongst IEP teams. If we can get an IEP team to really care, to really kind of put themselves in the position of the child or sometimes the parents as advocates, because parents have rights also, then we might have a better result. And so I like to, you know, read about negotiation strategy for 1,000 reasons, but since I have focused mainly on special education for the last 10 plus years, I have found myself really kind of diving more and more into negotiation strategy, even more than I did when I was doing more family law work, and 90% of cases ended up in mediation or some kind of alternative dispute resolution process, and I was working as a mediator. The reason why is because special education, it's and there is the mediation process in special education that is used quite a bit in a lot of states. And so I think it's really important. And I think this empathy piece is super important. So I want to talk today about a different way to think about empathy that has this psychological foundation to it. So we're going to talk about validating the other people's emotions, just simply validating. The goal when you are validating other people's emotions is really to kind of disarm them and make them feel comfortable. But to, you know, you're still getting down to their interests. You know, we love interest-based negotiation around here. And so for validating their interests or their emotions, they will probably be more likely to talk about their why, to talk about their interests. And that's how we, you know, start talking. So if we can identify emotions first, then we can start to deal with them, just like with kids. You know, when I talk about interoception, or some people say interoception, that is the sensory processing thing of feeling our feelings. A lot of kids get stuck there. Naming our feelings, identifying them, utilizing skills and strategies to ameliorate any uncomfortable feeling or unproductive feeling or other adjectives that we need to resolve feelings. And then identifying the feelings of others and amending our behavior in order to be kind and nurturing and collaborative and in community with other people. There's like 8 steps of feelings, like in this feelings genre, in order to interact with other people. And if we think about people that struggle with feelings, and we're taking like a little tangent about kids, it's really important that we figure out where they are. You know, are they just really struggling to feel their feelings? Jack Barlow doesn't really know. He doesn't get a whole lot of messages from his body about feelings. I was actually saying to a friend yesterday, this is a very tangential podcast episode, but I was saying to a friend yesterday, we were talking about pelvic floor. And I think if you follow me on social media, you probably know I'm doing a new pelvic floor thing. It's yoga based. It's called Restore Your Core. And I'm really liking it. For the first time, something is finally working and I am starting to feel a little bit, but I really can't feel my pelvic floor. And I don't know. I've been to 2 different physical therapists, one insurance based, one concierge. I've spent all kinds of money, all kinds of time. I've done it all. And I really cannot feel like from slightly above my belly button below And we don't know why. We don't know if it's neurological from my back. I do have some neurological damage from when I broke my back when I was 15, and it gets worse because I bulge discs and all kinds of stuff like that. Or if it's a result of having two C-sections, or if it's some combo. But yeah, so, you know, how do we feel our bodies? I don't feel this physical thing, and some people don't feel emotions or certain emotions as accurately or as often, or, you know, whatever is unique to their bodies. And so we need to start there. Now, at the negotiation table, for the most part, I would say that most people have, you know, somewhat typically developing psyches when it comes to interoception on IEP teams. Most people on IEP teams are professionals. Some of them might be neurodivergent and we don't know. And so I think it's important that we really look at the other people's feelings at the table, think about our own, go deeper into both sets of feelings, and then see if we can explore ways to make the feelings more productive, right? Because if we're stuck in anger, if we're stuck in confusion, if we're stuck in any kind of emotion that's going to pause the process or impede the process, then we need to explore ways to get past those. So I like to do that. I talk in my negotiation workshop, and if you don't know what that is, the negotiation workshop is something that's only available in the ABC course. The ABC course is Advocacy, Business, and Concepts in Special Education, and it's really geared toward helping folks start and grow their special education advocacy business. And I have a tool in there called the negotiation workshop. It's only available there. And it goes through negotiation and advocacy tactics, really a strategy, but more tactics that come from some of my favorite books in negotiation strategy, mediation kind of stuff. So I talk a lot there about tactical empathy, like empathy for a purpose. You know, like I'm a humongously empathetic person. And so I empathize with people all day long. But what if I'm empathizing for a purpose? Then it becomes tactical. And that's okay. Like, it's not, you know, we're not being sneaky or sly, because if we think about this, we're like really trying to improve or maximize the special education of a student. Like, it's okay to be tactical about that, even in our discussion amongst the IEP team members. Okay. So what do I mean by tactical empathy when we're talking about validating emotions amongst people on the IEP team? I think we're about 15 minutes into this podcast and I'm finally going to start talking about it. You catch me on a Friday and I'm casual, I might just start talking. Okay, so let's start with this. If you ask somebody how they're feeling, or like, tell me how you're emotions are, like what's going on, what you're doing is you are saying to them, I care about how you're feeling. And this is really, really far away and different from agreeing with them. It's not like, yeah, I understand. Because when you do that, remember in our Patrick Lencioni Five Dysfunctions of a Team book, we're going to get to this like harmonious discord where nobody really agrees, but it's, and then ego gets in the way and nobody really wants anybody to succeed because we all want to be right. We don't want harmonious discord. We want ideological conflict. And so if we're saying like, how are you feeling about that? Or if we are saying, you look frustrated, we are saying, I want to understand how you are feeling. I want to understand your emotion at this particular time. And I want to see the world from your perspective. When somebody says that to me, I immediately feel safe. I feel safe around them. I get this sense of security that my emotions are safe there, that my emotions are welcome there, and that they're going to be a part of that conversation. And so when we acknowledge that somebody looks as though they are feeling differently, we are identifying how they feel, and it gets us closer to that person despite like things that we might not know about. right? So like, we don't have to say, oh, my mom's dying. Or, you know, yesterday I was in a meeting and one of the people's blood sugar was really low. And then later, you know, she just said my blood sugar is low and she was eating during the meeting. It was fine. She turned her camera off because she felt like she did not look super peppy. And that was a fine explanation. But knowing that she wasn't feeling super well, I think I was probably a little more. And then towards the end of the meeting, she shared that she had a new diagnosis and that she was really kind of coping with stuff. And she felt, she was like, you know, this is such a great team that I wanted to call off today, but I really wanted to be here because I thought maybe being with you all would be helpful. And so we had this really nice vulnerability in the meeting because we had this other thing going on that had nothing to do with the meeting, right? So a way to validate somebody's emotions is to acknowledge it. When we acknowledge it, people feel safe and meetings go better. So what do? First, watch people. See, watch their facial expressions. Watch their body language. Are their arms crossed? Do they look like they're sucking on lemons? Are they thinking? Are they looking at other people like she is like out of her mind? Are they nodding? Are they smiling? Do they have that look like, you said it, not me? Look for things that look questioning, that look agreeing, that look confused. Look for those people. And then label it out loud. Say something like, Mrs. Jones, it looks like you are not in agreement. It looks like you are not familiar with this. That's a better way than saying it looks like you're confused. Or do you disagree? Are you feeling uncomfortable with this information? Oh, it looks like you agree. You look excited to share something. You look fill in the blank. It sounds like, it looks like, it seems like. Now, you notice that I didn't say, I see you scowling, or I notice. We don't want the focus to be on us. We want the focus to be on the other person that's experiencing this emotion. So we avoid those I statements that psychologists talk about, and we talk about the other person. It looks like, it seems like, it sounds like, it smells like, I don't know. You look, okay? Then listen for the response and pause. You know how important silence is in negotiation and in discussion. Listen, it looks like you don't agree. And wait, you look uncomfortable. And wait. When you wait, they'll talk. And you'll get more about their information, about their feelings. Then see if you can replace those negative feelings with the positive, with the solution. I tell Jack all the time, Jack's in this phase where he likes to say, it's your fault. Like, we're out of grapes. It's your fault. Okay, well, I mean, I guess technically it's my fault because I'm the grocery lady, but somebody else, like, if I don't know we're out of grapes, is it really my fault that I don't go buy the groceries, right? Like, nothing. Okay. Very few things are actually the fault of one singular person. And by the way, what does that matter? Like, isn't that kind of rhetorical whose fault it is? The situation is he's mad because he wins grapes. And so I've started to say, if there's a problem, we can work towards a solution. Right? Everybody wants to work towards a solution. Very few people like to be stuck in that consternation. And so if we can replace feelings that are more negative with solutions, then we're going to get someplace in the meeting. Now, this is another reason to do this in a less proactive, like zippy, excited, bells and whistles kind of way, because if you get to this point and you're like, okay, I got it, and you start giving solutions right then, like right on the moment, right on the spot, what happens is people are like, dude, you always have an answer. You always have a solution. Stop talking. And it doesn't feel collaborative anymore. Attorneys are blamed for this a lot out in the world. Like when we're doing our jobs, people are like, oh yeah, she's really solutions oriented. And then we go out in the real world and all we do is try to solve problems. And people are like, chill out. Like we're just talking. We don't need like a 7-step plan to decide where we're going to dinner. And so I know this from a lot of experience that we have to stop. We have to listen. We have to validate and we have to problem solve together on the other person's time. Okay, so that's kind of the big key to doing this well. So validating emotions is a super duper effective way to improve your negotiation strategy. I hope that helps you this IEP season. I will see you next week, same time, same place. Have a good week.